We're back for season two.
Yes, it's bigger. It's badder. It's...
Oh, just get on with it.
Bad scripts.
Good evening and welcome to Bad Script. It's me, Steve Jones, back again for more Last Resort Delight. We are 8 episodes in, so it's time to take a little bit of time to reflect. So joining me, as always, the man who needs no introduction but gets one every week anyway, it's none other than Mr. Mike Garlia. Good evening, Mike.
Good evening, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm very well. And yourself?
I am very well. I'm very well. In fact, I'm really that well. I was lamenting today in the glorious sunshine. Now, as anyone that lives in Scotland will know, we don't get very many days of sunshine. And today just happened to be an absolutely glorious sunny day. This is our what we would call top-off weather, or tap-off weather, as they would call it up here. And so it got me thinking, Steve, about what I'm thankful for with summer, the things that I like most about summer and the things I dislike most. And I'm wondering, you know, you being a Nottingham man, what's the things that you like most about summer and dislike?
Ooh, now there's a question. In terms of like, it's the not having to put on a coat every time you want to go out and do something. You know, being able to nip to the shop and not feel like you have to wrap up so warm that, you know, you could keep a small Eskimo family quite comfortable in your jumper. as far as don't like, I think, you know, British people, we like it hot, but we don't like it hot. You know, so there's warm and then there's warm, you know, there's many comics have gone over it over the years. But, you know, when it's too hot at night, you're trying to sleep and you can't sleep. And it's like, oh, I have a 1980s fan light in my room that spins above the bed. Regardless of the weather, that goes every night. Spin.
Well, it goes very well with your mirrored ceiling as well, I must
admit. Well, yeah, it does. So what can you say? Not always the best thing to wake up to in the morning, but, you know, there's that. Mike, it would be amiss of us, I think, to discuss this first 8 episodes and the joys of summer and all of that new life and vigor without someone who brought a lot of life and vigor to this podcast just 8 short episodes ago. I'm very pleased to say, joining us once again, none other than dancer, singer, business owner, extraordinaire, none other than Ali Riley.
Welcome back to the show.
Woo! Hello, boys. How are you?
Hello, Ali, my oldest friend in the world. How are you?
Thanks, Mikey.
It's Mikey again, yes. And Mike.
And hello, Steve.
Hello. And I don't take offence to the fact he said oldest friend there. I know he does it to jibe at me. You know, as if to say, Ali's known me longer than you, but no, I think there's nothing I can do about time, you know, it passes.
I'll just have to die first.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where we go from there, but
I'm not sure. There's a crossroads right here.
Yeah,
I don't know. Ali, how are you keeping? What are you up to?
I'm really good, thank you. I've been really, really busy. I've had loads of photo shoots and events and all sorts of stuff going on this last month. So had a couple of days off for the Jubilee. But yeah, I've been very busy.
We've seen, because you're very prominent on Facebook, and you know, Steve and I, we talk a lot. We just love watching you because you're so natural and charismatic. And I particularly liked the episode where you went through all those examples of tiaras. Now, I didn't realize, being as ignorant as I am to head accessories for weddings, just the very many different variations and sizes and styles in these things you put in your head. I just thought it's like a one size fits all type approach. So you were kind of going through quite a few of these. Did you find a top seller from all of that? Did you find one that your customers like the most?
Yeah, well, the one that's proving to be quite popular isn't even something that people would necessarily wear for weddings. So, and I've been wearing it constantly, a bin bag now. I'm quite surprised, actually, that you watched so much of it, because it was literally just me messing up my hair, putting on lots of headbands. But I've got one that's got like a big bow on it, a big white bow. And yeah, that's been really popular. I've had quite a few people wanting that just to wear for everyday life. And I've been wearing it a lot as well. So yeah, that one.
Well, I did have one observation from that actually. And I've been dying to ask you this question. Yeah. Are you into, do you have magical powers?
Yes.
I knew that because when I was watching, because you said, oh, I'm actually missing some of my stock here. I need to go and get it. And what it seemed like you had to go to a stock room or to a basement to go and get whatever it is you were looking for, the extra tiaras. But you were like gone for like 10, like a millisecond, and you appeared with more stuff. So I thought you were doing a Bewitched thing where you just rub your nose and disappeared and then came back again.
A little bit like that. No, actually, it's good that it comes across like that, because my boutique's actually very small. It's a very little boutique, and it's just one room, and then I've got a dressing room off from that. So yeah, I could just kind of lay my hands on everything really quickly. But I mean, no, it was magic. It was definitely magic.
Well, you are magic, and we love watching you when you do your little inserts on Facebook and stuff like that.
We're big fans, of course.
And I'm so glad to hear that your business is going well. So, you know, as we always do in this show, and Steve will do it at the end, if you're looking for a wonderful set of advice and style and photography, and hey, Ali's always looking for models. If you really want to get involved, get in touch with us and we'll put you in touch with a fantastic
Ali. That is true. Actually, I've got a group on Facebook. We're on all social media, but I find that Facebook's best for this. And it is a group just for people who are interested in modelling for me. So if I have any shoots coming up, you know, I might need somebody of a certain size or a certain age.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Ali, because I've been waiting for that call. And
Have you? I've got a perfect dress for you.
I didn't want to ask because I'm proud, but I thought, you know, you're looking for a model and I've still got hair. And
wow. Got the perfect tiara for you.
I was about to say I'm partial to a fascinator, but I'm missing some crucial elements there. And another jibe by Mike again about him still having hair.
They just keep coming, don't they?
I do feel like I am in the firing line tonight from Mike. So, you know, I've been a little bit pushed onto the back foot here. So we will just have to watch out this doesn't turn into some sort of global warfare.
We'll be kind to you from now on. Okay. Get the cotton wool out and wrap you up.
That's all right. I just lay it over here. It's fine. So Ali, after our last conversation, we talked about expectations for season two of The Last Resort and things that you would like to see. You're now have seen, listened to all 8 episodes so far?
I have. And I actually had an extra little listen from the earlier ones over the last couple of days, because the first time I listened, to the first season, I was a bit late to the party, so they'd already been released. So I was just listening to them one after the other. And, you know, whereas this time I've had to wait a week. So, you know, I've sort of, it's been a while since I've listened to the first ones, whereas it was literally a couple of days I listened to all of them first time round. So, yeah, I have got to the end and I've had a re-listen. And there was, surpassed all expectations. You gave me everything I wanted and more. And that was you, Steve.
Yeah, thank you. You know, we don't like to say carrying people, but you know, if that's in inverted commas, you know, but we do what we can. So Mike, have you got any specific questions that you'd like to ask Ali about, you know, season two and the things we've done?
Questions for Ali for season two. Do you know what, Ali, I think if you were to, and we're putting you on the spot here actually, but if you were to just give us your honest feedback on what you and on what you've that you how you found season two, what you've not liked about season two, that's a really good starting point. And you know, as we progress through, if you've got any questions for us, around actually why did you do that, or why did you take it in that direction, and why did you mark my name with that horrible sex scene, we will answer and address all of those questions. And Steve has openly said already, by the way, that he will not hesitate by throwing me under the bus for the decisions we made during that episode. But yeah, what I mean, we you know, you know the construct and you know how you have to build drama and you have to build story and you have to kind of create a character arcs. And, you know, we have to build up to something because we knew this was going to be kind of three chunks, this one being the first chunk. But what's your honest feedback so far?
Okay, gosh, a lot of questions, a lot of things to say. So, love the new, the old characters coming back. You know, it felt like familiar. It was people that I knew. I felt really a bit cross with, is it Bernie?
Yes, Barry. Bernie.
Bernie. The way that he treated the staff, even though, you know, he's like this exciting, flamboyant character, but it's like, you can't talk to them like that. You know? So, and I felt annoyed for them, that the way that they were treated. But, you know, we've seen it in real life when you've got the staff, you've got the higher up manager who's going, that's not good enough. And, you know, and then somebody swoops in who's supposedly going to do it better. So, yeah, that was really good. And, you know, the whole Dan and Donna thing was so cute when he got really drunk and, you know, I just love you, and you know, the fact he sort of was just hanging out with these people that he didn't really know, but told them his life story, and because it's that kind of environment where you do get to know people, and you know, that was really cute. Getting to know the new characters, yeah, that was interesting because at first it was like, Ali, as soon as I heard the name, like my ears picked up, like, oh, talking to me. And like she had no sort of personality at first, I don't know. Like you'd said, oh, Hayley's very excited and, you know, she's really happy to be there, and Paula's, you know, a bit more can't be bothered, not interested, and Ali, and that, you know, didn't know anything about her. And then the next thing we know, she's like having this crazy sex scene with this guy that she doesn't know very well. And it was like, what's going on? Would have liked a little bit more of a relationship development, maybe.
well, and that's an interesting.
Explain yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And we do need to, don't we? I think Ali, we wanted to portray a little bit of that kind of the word dismemberment almost. So like this feeling of, in terms of she doesn't feel part of it at the moment. So she doesn't really feel integrated, and she's looking for things to occupy comfort. Her time, things to do and comfort. Yeah. And,
yes.
And personally, I think it's a mistake what she did with Adam, not in terms of writing it, but I think
life choices, Steve. Life choices.
She's made a bad choice because
life choices, and not bad choices.
But I think she's made that choice in order, and it is something to do, and it sounds really ugh and icky and what have you. But
that's the reality of a lot of people's lives. There, not mine. Mm. I hasten to add, but yeah, definitely. It's funny you should say that because I'm sure we'll come to it at some point. But I do have the infamous diary.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Ali's diary. Ali has the diary. We've just done it with
little post-its. Oh,
Ali's done her homework too.
Oh, she's organised.
But before we get into that, let me just cover off a couple of things with Ali itself, because it's interesting you said what you said, and we changed Ali's trajectory. An arc after we spoke to you first time, because we really wanted to, you know, dedicate some of the things you told us in the last, you know, the last time we spoke into Ali. So that scene where she goes to the shell and she's by herself and she's feeling quite lonely and she's just pottering around and she's getting ready for bed. We really wanted to convey, as Steve said, that sense of disconnection from everything. And that's why she's saying, oh, let's give it a couple of weeks. And if it doesn't work out, I'm going home. And that's some of the things that you were talking to us about around that loneliness. And I said to Steve, we've not really covered that before. Well, everyone's just, you know, in together and it's all happy-go-lucky. Mm. We had to create that sense of melancholy, that I'm out of my surroundings. I don't really know anybody. And I don't know if I like doing this particularly much. And that's why we suddenly had Ali's arc go into you know, she's now joined the cast. She's going to be cast for the next mm-hmm. for the next script, which is she, and that's who Bernie refers to at the end of the episode, just how good she was. But she's our way into that cast now. She's our eyes mm-hmm. and ears into it, and the bridge between the kind of camp coats. And so you're going to see a lot more coming from Ali. The scene itself that you're referring to, it was my idea to do that. Because
yes, I heard that actually. You told me that.
Well, we have an arc for Adam, and it plays into that arc in terms of where he's going.
They did the performance at the church for the church people, didn't they? And for the Satanists, and there was that conversation between the boy band, and he was very much like, "Yeah, I'm going to get out there, and I'm going to, you know, sample the delights and everything." So that's where that connects. That's coming together there, isn't it?
Yeah. In terms of the scene itself, I wanted to test the boundaries of what we could get away with a little bit in that episode. And the original iteration was far, far worse. From what you
far worse.
Heard.
Do you know
what?
This is so funny. Naughty schoolboy explaining why you've written this essay in this way.
It's why he drew the penis on the book. Yeah, that's basically what's happening at the moment.
Yeah.
Steve did put some lines in there that I wasn't expecting, which is what you hear, because I read it and I'm like, what the hell is that? Like, where did that come from? So I was thrown.
I went more Mills and Boone, and you were more sort of red hot. Hardcore with some of the terms you use, and I was like, we really can't go down that avenue, so to speak, because that's not really in keeping, and there was no build up to it just kind of happens. And we don't see any of the build up to it, but we kind of like that shock, because and get into the whole reason behind it, and we don't want to go too much into where things are going, but when we look back on Adam's past and that first year of will they, won't they, and there's you know, him and Sam and all that stuff that went on, and then Kelly and he just threw caution to the wind and gone, I'm just not going to feel anymore, because I don't want to feel, I don't want to hurt, so I'm just going to go out there with, you know, like the whole friends with benefits, just go out and do whatever I want to do, and it's going to be physical and transactional and nothing more, and ultimately we're not seeing a happy Adam, we're not seeing a fulfilled Adam. But he's searching for something that he's not going to find doing what he's doing. And I think it's that. And I don't know, Mike, I don't know if you felt the same, but I had periods in my life where similar sort of behavior, and you thinking that having that physical relationship will bring you the warmth and the completeness.
Well, I think it's exactly the same as the character for Ali. I think she's feeling a little bit lonely, and she's just, you know, that's what happened, and that's what did happen. It was two people just pair up. There's nothing much to it. It's just one of these impromptu moments that happen, which is why they say, you know, it's not sunrise yet. You know, we don't have to face the day. Let's just pretend it's still last night, you know, and that whole sense of, as soon as we open the door and we open the curtains, it's over. We know it's over. We're going to both walk away and just get on with our lives. But if we don't do that right now, we get to play a little bit more. And that's that scene. It wasn't really the night. It was the next day. And I think it was a different way of portraying that. And that did happen. And I remember having conversations like that, going, if we open that door, if we face the world, this moment is gone forever. Mm. So let's just try and hold on to it for a little while longer. Mm. Now, I didn't quite get that out there clearly enough, you know, but that was what was going through my mind.
Well, now you've explained it, that makes sense. And I forgive you. I mean, it does make sense. And to be honest, it was only listening back to it the second time, when I was listening to the conversation about the boy band, that I went, oh, hang on, you know, it was Adam, and he'd said that. But I think that was due to like the period of time that had gone between listening to that one and listening to the other one. So it was funny, because I was in a supermarket and I was doing my shop with my earphones in, listening to that scene.
Did you feel really like self-conscious walking around, like, I hope no one
you were
hear,
oh, come on, you were wafting yourself down with some iceberg lettuce, weren't you? You were getting really like, oh, hello.
I was in the chill dial.
Now here's a question for you about that, then. I know that the character had your namesake, Do you think you'd have felt differently about the scene if they didn't, if it was another name that the character had? Or did you feel like you were, there was almost a personal invasion there in your own character?
Definitely. I mean, you know, there's obviously the scenes with Kelly and Wayne and Kelly and was it
Mushy P?
Yeah. So, you know, and that obviously there's the ick, isn't there? But yeah, it definitely didn't affect me in the same way. I think it's because, you know, I had kind of, you say Ali, and I was picturing myself, and like I could picture myself in those situations, you know, greeting people at the gates and talking to the new coats and all that kind of thing. And then suddenly you put her into this room, which in my head is my room that I have there. With this guy doing it, and I'm like, but that never happened. Not like that.
we seek forgiveness rather than permission, obviously, for this one. But thank you for, because look,
that's always the best way, to be honest.
You were so rich in some of the things that you spoke us about last time. We really wanted to capture your voice in some of that, and not just with Ali, but with some of the things that was happening. Because it's interesting you mentioned Bernie, because Bernie's had a bit of a reaction to our listeners. People absolutely hate him. Do they?
So many messages.
I'll tell you who I pictured. Elton John. That's who I pictured before.
Yeah. Well, it is based on a choreographer that we knew at the time who came in and did some of the bigger shows and had been involved in television stuff for a long time. Who
slightly before my time, but I was aware of that person by reputation. So, I knew about all of your experience with that person, but I didn't actually meet them.
And I think it's this weird thing that me and Mike write these characters, and then to have people, and we've had messages of people getting really angry about what Bernie says and Bernie does, and we're like, he's not real, you know, it's only just what we came up with, you know. And I think back to now, you remember if you've done like English literature at school and stuff, and the teacher's always looking for hidden meaning in every line, and I think back now going, that's just bullshit. The person was just writing a line. They were just actually writing something. They weren't necessarily an undertone to everything they say. So but it's a weird
but
one.
That's
like you
great
say.
That's so good that people are so invested in your characters and in the stories, and you know, that's a good thing.
We've had loads of the feedback we keep getting is, can you guys share less anecdotes and talk less and just get more into the story, please? We just want the story.
Really?
yeah.
People.
Interesting from a dynamic shift, and this didn't happen on purpose, we never consciously meant for this to happen, is people are starting to feel sorry for Wayne. They're disgusted by him, but there's a sense of feeling sorry for him because of the games that Kelly's playing, and people are starting to see him as
manipulating
a bit of a victim.
Him, isn't she? Yeah,
and I think it's almost given us an without too many spoilers, but I think it gives us an idea that Wayne wasn't always like he is. He wouldn't have stayed there and moved up the ranks if he'd have always been as he is. And I mean, I think we talked about this a bit in season one, that he's frustrated. He's not there doing it anymore. He's kind of almost put on the shelf and forgotten about.
He is
about
pretty
him.
Still yeah. sinister, though, isn't he? With what he does and the curry on his face and all that kind of stuff.
Oh,
the nuts.
The sweaty nuts.
Oh, so much feedback about the nuts.
So, Ali, the question is, when it comes to characters like Kelly, who is obviously a bit of a villain now, and she's got a sight set on these camp codes, to Wayne, who's just completely disgusting, to Bernie, who is very dangerous to everyone, I suppose, and in these destructive force, are we pushing it too far? Are we pushing the realms of believability here? What do you think?
No, not too far. I mean, when those characters are in a scene, it's like, oh, what's going to happen? You know, especially Kelly is someone I love to hate. You know, when it's a scene with Kelly, it's like, yeah, come on, what's she going to do? So, you know, Wayne, I'm a bit like, my skin starts to crawl, and you know, when I listen to the scene with the sweaty nuts, I forwarded that. I was like, I can't listen to that part again. It's just so disgusting. So,
it is gross, isn't it? But the sort of thing that, you know, you see people doing, all that talk of, you know, never eat peanuts off a bar because there's likely to be, you know, five different bits of urine in them or whatever. Well,
one of the things that Steve and I mapped out really early was this idea of Kelly and Wayne in the office. And we mapped this out like months ago. And we said, we got to have this scene where Wayne comes on to Kelly and she rebuffs him. And then she goes off and she has sex with someone, but it's outside and the cameras catch it. And Wayne sees it and starts doing naughty things to himself, not realizing it's Kelly. And we, like, when we were trying to write that, we were like, we have no idea how to write this, you know, how to put this down in the way that we see it in our minds. Did we capture that for you?
Oh, definitely. That was, I mean, it did sort of take me back because I said about that time, didn't I, when I had a bit of a snog. Yeah, and it was like, it's so plausible. It completely, you know, could happen, and I could completely see the whole thing, and you know, which isn't necessarily a good thing, is it? But
I think it's that blend of different scenarios, and we're going from the professional when we're talking about the stuff that, you know, when we're having all these auditions and the rehearsals and what have you, and then the personal, and it's so intertwined because you're living and working there that the lines get blurred and all this stuff happens, but it's happening back to back. It's not that you go home and you go on a night out and these things happen, so people are having a little knee trembler by the bins.
There's no separation at all, is there?
None at all.
No, and I think part of the, you know, the big characters, you have got to push them. You've got to push them because that's what makes it interesting and fun and exciting. And, you know, the voices that you do for them as well, it just brings life to them. So,
well, we have agreed that we're not going to introduce any new people because we can't come up with any more accents because we're literally at a point now where it's like a smorgasbord of
we keep forgetting who they are, but Steve, about that. Well, you'll see when you read it.
He's written a new scene, hasn't he? You know he has, and there's about five new people in there that we've
got. Do you know what? I can say this now because it won't ruin anything, but I did write a new character called Eric. And Eric was this old producer partner of Bernie who reveals so much about Bernie's past. And we deleted the whole scene in the end because Steve read it and Steve said, I really like it, but it's just another character and we're quite big. So we're going to save it for later on, but it gives so much insight into the crap Bernie's done in his past with this new character,
that
Eric.
Sounds interesting.
And that's where Judy's going to get involved, because I think Judy's going to start unpicking this idea of Bernie. And that's what she said at the end when she says, this is war. You know, she's going to go after him. But
that's it. Hell hath no fury. Do you know what I mean? That's what they say, isn't it? So let's just see how that picks up. But there are plans afoot. We have planned right out the end of this season, and even maybe a little bit of season three is almost. But
fighting.
But let's not jump the gun. Only if people want to listen. So
only if our three listeners want to hear it.
So they're all on the call now. So
that's one.
So Ali, one of the major set pieces we had in this first episode was this idea of this religious festival and the problems that occur. Now, you worked at some of these religious festivals, as did Steve and I. So this is a real, real thing. In fact, I don't want to say that. In your own words, is it a real thing or not?
It is. And actually, I do have a bit about it in my diary, but I couldn't lay my hands on it immediately. But my memories of it was that they took over the entire resort, like literally every single room. So we had rehearsals to do, but we couldn't rehearse because they were even in our studios. We had two dance studios, didn't we? And we just couldn't do anything or go anywhere. And there was like stands everywhere selling hoodies and merchandise. And they had like a giant big top, like proper massive circus tent on the grass, and there was like this massive rock concert going on. It was crazy, but all like, you know, Christian songs. And I can remember sitting in there because I was fascinated. I wanted to know what it was about, and sitting there and just thinking, they're gonna know that I'm not one of them and everything's gonna stop.
You're gonna set on fire or something stop burning.
Like the Wicker Man and get me on stage. But there was one point my mum had come to visit me and we'd gone off resort while it was the religious festival, and we were driving back onto resort, and I think they must have just finished one of these big events, and there was just like hundreds and hundreds of people just walking towards us. So the car, we had to come to a standstill and let all these people, it was like a cult. It honestly, it was the creepiest thing that I've ever experienced. But, you know, everybody was lovely.
Yeah.
Me being young and stupid and not really understanding what was going on.
Well, how about the way we depicted it in the show then? Because we actually included devil worshippers into the mix.
I think we took liberties with the situation and made it a little bit more exciting. Because as you said, it was usually a very calm and peaceful and relaxed environment when those guys were there. So we thought people would perhaps be a little bit bored by that. So we had to put a little bit of a spanner in the works. But how did that play out for you?
I just thought it was really funny. I mean, like in my head, I'm picturing the different venues that we worked at, and you know, that one group was in one venue and the other group in the other, and the death metal, but bless the poor boy band Fusion on stage having to perform to them and the reactions and getting a glass of piss chucked at him and a bottle of piss or whatever it was. And yeah, I think, yeah, it was funny. And because there was actually biker weekends as well, wasn't there? Do you remember the biker weekends? So it's almost like a combination of the two. It's not saying that all bikers are devil worshippers, but you know,
that was so far that's been my favorite scene to record, just because we got the devil whispers in, you know, the gigger, you know, me and Steve kind of do roughly the same accent.
Trying to be sort of down that way.
Yeah. Oh, it's gigger over there. Look at that. It's gigger over there in the bar. What's he doing here? And then we got to add a little bit of mystery on Gary and not give away too much, but just enough that there's something not quite right about him that Colin experiences, because these two have been undercooked as characters, and we said we got to do something here. And Steve and I came up with this call. Well, what if they recognize him and he's an ex-devil worshipping culty type person?
And I think that played into the whole point, was it played into that sense of, and we talked about it last time we chatted, that you don't really know some of these people. You know them, you don't really,
but only
know
in the bubble
them. Yeah, exactly.
You only know the person who they want to show you.
Yeah,
in that situation.
And I think that's a perfect example of it, that his best mate while he's there, he's always working with him, they're always together, had no idea about this past that existed. And that he's sort of some sort of, well, it almost, I think we always gave away the this sort of almost a cult leader thing going on with him there.
Yeah. He felt,
but I don't know about you, Mike, but I almost feel like we should just leave it there. Very much the Gavin and Stacey fishing trip. It's never gets explained. We never talk about why this happened or why he left.
No, I think it could be quite a fun thing where his mate starts to look at him differently and like starts worshipping him a little bit, and you know, wants to be part of this cult and this devil worship. And
well, maybe there's room
there. That's just another direction. Maybe, but that is funny to not ever mention it as well. But if he's trying to get it out of him, I don't know. But it's good to have a little mystery, isn't it?
Exactly.
It is. It is. I do remember those religious festivals and, you know, being stuck on a bus for hours and hours in traffic because of where we were. There was only one road in and one road out, and everyone's trying to get in and people are trying to get out. And my goodness, it was trying times. And also DJing in one of the venues and literally knowing nothing about what religious music to put on. So I just played the Sister Act 2 soundtrack because that's all I knew, you know. And I played Glory, Glory, Lord, We Adore Thee about 15 times, you know. But it filled the dance floor. It was a filler. It was a filler.
It was the Christian Katrina and the Waves, that was, wasn't it? The Walking on Sunshine that always gets everybody dancing.
It really was. And because we worked so late, I remember having a few drinks at like 2 a.m. with another coat who shall not be named, for the very, very good reason that he fell asleep on my bed, left the next morning, and I woke up in a pile of his pee.
Oh, lovely.
I was peed over. I was genuinely peed. Now I woke up going, why am I so wet? I don't understand what's gone on.
Did you think it was yourself? Did you think
I knew it wasn't myself.
Was it yourself?
No, well, I was wearing a nappy, so it couldn't have been.
It was one of those X-Dry ones, so you had the big gel padding.
It's true, but it, fine. But friend, if you're listening, I haven't forgotten.
Or forgiven.
I think I forgave him at the time, actually.
But you know, like you started the whole season with the boys rehearsing on the courts, didn't you? You know, they were outside rehearsing. And that is reminiscent of having to rehearse while these events, you know, were going on, because we didn't have the space. So, and I've also got notes saying that we were doing a new show and we were having to rehearse from 10 at night till midnight, because that was the only time that we could actually get into the rooms.
And that's something that we experienced too when we were genuinely in a boy band, and we're probably giving away too much now that we actually did this. I don't know if we ever shared this, but we had those rehearsals. Well, and yeah, I mean, we know you have, but the general public might not be aware that at one time, yeah. And we did. We had our little boombox, and we were there with all our CDs going through what we were gonna perform in the dark, trying to, you know, find a space to rehearse so we could do it, and having security come up and say, "What are you doing, boys?" And we're like, we're just trying to rehearse, you know, we just want to do this show.
Sorry, we were just wearing nappies at the time, Steve, as well. Yeah. It didn't look strange at all.
Was it in the graveyard, the caravan graveyard? Do you remember that?
The caravan graveyard.
So there was all the caravans where the Ent staff lived, because you touched on that, haven't you, about all the Ent staff moving into it. And then just over the other side, a bit further away, there was like where caravans went to die, and it was all sort of broken down ones. And there was one caravan there that was like a love shack or something, like you could crawl into it, and it had a heart-shaped bed and a mirror on the ceiling. And
I have no idea about this, and I've never heard of the caravan. We missed this.
I hope you got a pen and paper. Are you writing this down?
I think it's a bit late now. You're about 20 years too late for this one. It may well have gone at this point. But no, we had no idea that existed. So no, we were on the multi-sports court. Yeah, the multi-sports court that was outside that Wild West saloon. We were outside
the wonky donkey.
The wonky donkey, absolutely. Yeah. So no, how did we miss a heart-shaped bed with a mirrored ceiling? I mean, apart from my own mirrored ceiling that Mike's already discussed, I don't think I've ever seen one. So not in real life. So
well, it does conjure more questions for Ali and how Ali knows about said bed.
Well, we had a group of. Am I allowed to
a
say
a group? Sorry, where are we going?
Hang on. Am I allowed to say where our resort was?
On the east coast of the northeast coast of the UK.
Yeah, the actual name of the place, the town. Or is that too close? Well, anyway, so you know the Blair Witch Project.
Yes.
We did the blank bitch project, and it was a group of us, like, had a camcorder and ran around the caravans filming it as if we were doing that film. And that's when we came across that van. So we were just kind of running and hiding and messing about and screaming, and it didn't open properly, but there was a bit of a hole in the wall, and if you just crawled through the hole, that's how you found it.
And there was someone in the thong just staring at the wall as you get in. So who was the bitch? Who was the bitch?
I don't remember. I think it was a puppet. We had a puppet.
Okay, so sticking another time.
Yeah, it was very, very strange times.
What people do to stop from being bored. This is,
we didn't have phones, we didn't have the internet, we didn't have Netflix, we didn't have, you know, other streaming things are available.
You were posh, you had a Hi8 video camera, that's a camcorder, that's all you need for some entertainment in a heart-shaped bed and a mirrored ceiling.
That is true. I've got it. Sorry, go on.
I said Mike just used to sleep with strangers instead. That was his entertainment. So that's all he could do. Yeah, exactly. So what can you do? I mean, some people will pay a lot of money for that kind of behaviour, but Mike got it all for free. So, you know, who's the lucky one?
Life choices, Steve. Life choices. So Ali, one person.
I feel like there's a story here. Sorry. Yeah,
there's always a story. You must listen to it. I give away far too much about myself every single time. I go into recordings every time with Steve and say, Steve, I am not sharing any anecdotes or stories this time. There's no more. And then suddenly they all come pouring out. It's like therapy, really, isn't it?
It's cathartic, isn't it? Cathartic. Yeah.
That that no one trusts me who knows me now, because they're like, who were you?
This isn't the same professional man that I know now. What's going on?
You're not that professional man to me, though. You're still Mikey from
the block.
What? From Wakey.
Wakey. So yeah, got... lad, Wakey from Wakey. Yeah, he's done all right, he has, hasn't he? So, Ali, there is one character I do want to speak to you about, actually, and that is Robin. And Robin's on a bit of an emotional journey right now. What's your takeaway from that?
Bless him. Because he doesn't know that Judy wants him, does he? He just knows that, oh no, he did know, but Bernie wants him just to spite Judy, doesn't he? I mean, I do understand the whole, you know, he thought it was going to be something and it isn't. It isn't what he expected it to be. You know, we've got this band, it's not working out how he wanted it to. He wants more for himself and he wants to better himself and have better opportunities. And I think that's reminiscent of a lot of people who go to work in these resorts. You think it's going to be a certain way and, you know, it turns out it isn't as rosy as you thought it was going to be. And bless him. He's having a bit of a tough time, isn't he?
He really is. But on that note as well, I shared a story about my disastrous Saturday Night Fever audition.
Yes, Ali, with the shirt.
With the shirt, true story. But Ali, do you have a story to tell in which you've gone into an audition unprepared or just, you know, or whatever happens? Do you have anything of that, of that kind of standard?
Embarrassing.
No. Maybe not so embarrassing, but my favourite musical growing up was Starlight Express. Just absolutely loved it. And always wanted to be in it. And while I was working on resort, an audition came up in London and I was like, I'm going. And my mum drove to pick me up and we went to London for the day and I did the audition. But you had to be at least 5'6". You had to be. That was the minimum height that you could be. And I'm 5'4" and a half. but I wore heels. But of course, everybody wore heels. So I was too short. I was never, you know, and my mum had driven me all the way to London and... I was never going to have a shot with it. But I think just the experience of being there and getting to, you know, audition for the show was good enough for me.
Oh, goodness me. So you've heard it here first. Starlight Express are heightists.
Heightists.
Or were. Yeah.
I think it's changed a bit. But, you know, at 5'4" and a half, you know, most dance jobs back in the day were 5'6" minimum, and there was a maximum as well. And you know, when I was cast, there was two of us that were smaller and two that were taller, and the smaller two were exactly the same height and the taller two were exactly the same height. So, and I was the fat one. I've been reading that in my diary, like it's really sad actually, but just thinking that I was overweight and
this is the 90s term PH fat, as in you were the awesome one.
Thank you.
But here's a statement that somebody made that I think is brilliant, which is, I wish I was as fat now as the first time I thought I was fat. Because when you think back and you go, I thought then, and then you get a bit older and you start to go, oh wow, yeah, I really didn't appreciate that. Actually, I should have been so much more comfortable in my body. But all of us had those same insecurities, I think, and nobody shares it. Nobody talks about it, but
this is it. I mean, the thing is, you know, when you go into a job like that and you have to fit into costumes that might be second, third, fourth hand and been used lots of times, and you've got to fit into those costumes. And, you know, wardrobe person isn't very happy if they're having to let them out for you. And, you know, I was chosen to be in the Queen Mum's birthday parade for 100th birthday. As a coat, the reason I was chosen, I heard it through a door, so the door was closed, I could hear the management speaking, and you know, one of the reasons was because I would fit into the outfits that they had, there you go.
I always had a problem with my nipples.
Well, yeah, Mike's always had a nipple issue.
I really have. Very, very conscious of.
And we're not going to body shame you, Mike, because this is you bringing this up. So nobody is body shaming you.
We haven't said anything.
Okay, I'm at that time in my life now where I can face into my nipple phobia of being very embarrassed.
You've embraced them, have you?
I have. You know, they're excruciatingly small nipples, and you know, whenever anyone saw me with that top on, they would all say just how small my nipples were, and it became a thing. It became a thing, you know, when, you know, you're wearing Lycra and, you know, you became really paranoid.
It's the Lycra, isn't it?
It's the Lycra. It's the Lycra. So I used to put stick-on ones that were really pointy and would just stick out a little bit more.
You didn't. You didn't.
No, of course I didn't.
You didn't. You definitely didn't. Can you imagine? He'd be running around like Madonna, you know, and...
I totally believe that you did that.
So, Ali, just before we get to your amazing diary, which is the highlight of this show, is there anything?
Put too much pressure on me.
Well, no pressure.
Mike,
is there anything you'd like to ask Steve or I about the show, about anything at all, about what's anything we've done or where we're going?
Oh well, right. I've got to ask you about the accents. Do you like write down anywhere, you know, so-and-so, this accent, so-and-so, this accent, so you can glance it? Or do you just remember? Because like Steve, you especially, sometimes you've got like four different characters and the narrator, and Mike's just got one.
Yeah, it's funny how this seems to happen, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Life choices, Steve. Life choices.
We know some of the older characters, and we've deliberately given them quite distinct accents to make it easier to differentiate, because we realized we wrote this was never the intention for it to be an sort of an audio play or anything. It was always intended to be like a TV show. So all of these characters would have been portrayed by different people and would have been recognizable visually. The second season, when we've done this is we had an awareness that this would be in the podcast. So we've deliberately tried to create individuals that are so different. So the new owner's South African, that Paula is a Brummie. You know, all of the stuff that will help someone who's listening when there's only two voices to differentiate between those characters. And the reality of the situation is, we did have quite a lot of different accents where we worked. There was a lot of people from around the UK in the places, but you would have had quite a few. There was quite a lot of people from around the East Midlands where I live, because we weren't far away from there. So a lot of people would come to the local one. And I still see people around today that we worked with 20 years ago, you know, in passing. So,
but to answer your question, no, we don't. That what you've suggested is actually really logical, that we should write down the characters and their accents. No, we don't. Well, we haven't.
Season one, we have character bios for every character. We've got a full layout. Yes. And we went through them all last season, but this season, we've been so concentrating on the writing and getting the scripts written in time to record to put the show out that we haven't written the bios for them yet. So,
I was thinking more it'd just be like name and one word on a post-it. Because I think if I was reading the script, I'd just be like, I can't remember how everybody speaks. I think you do ever so well.
Ali's showing holes in our process now. Why did we never think of this? What is wrong with you? Why didn't you come up with this idea? You're the logical one in this partnership.
Well, what can I say? I'm just too flippant. I like to live on the edge. So, you know, get ready. I've got a question for you then, Ali, on the set. So of the new characters that were created and the new scenarios, and taking away your namesake from it, who are you the most interested to learn more about?
I do think it is Bernie.
Yeah.
You know, just he's like he is for a reason. And I want to know what that is. Because, I mean, it could be that he has worked with literally everybody and he's done everything. And he's no longer wanted because he's an old has-been and doesn't have any new ideas. So he's having to prove himself. You know, maybe he's gone bankrupt. He's got to do this. Or maybe he never was anybody. He's just, you know, been on the periphery of everything. You know, I worked across the road from whoever, you know, like didn't actually have the context. So he's name-dropping I'm terrible. I name drop all the time. And it's because I don't do it, because I'm not in entertainment. I used to know people.
Well, it is sometimes.
Fraser Hines, don't you know?
Amazing. And I remember who Fraser Hines is as well. So you know, don't know, but it's like there's not many of your kids know.
Friend.
Yeah. But no. and 100% we agree. We're not quite there with Bernie. Though there's a couple of good observations, but when it's not quite the reality of the situation at the moment.
No, and let's not forget, he did steal Judy and Mark's the premise of their show to create his own. So
yeah, but it was, I think you two said when you were discussing it, it was just there. It wasn't like he'd listened to it, heard it was theirs, and then said, yeah, I'm going to do that. It's like, you know, he's just seen this piece of paper with an idea on and gone, yeah, let's have it. So, you know, I don't think it was intentionally. Oh, it was for me. He's a nasty piece of work. Oh, you sly dog, you.
And I will say this, Bernie is probably the only character that we've written so far that we just formed on the page almost immediately. Like, we just knew who he was almost straight away with very little talking about it. We just said, we need an artistic director. This guy's going to be from London. He's going to be full of himself, like this person that we want to work with. And Steve and I just went, yeah, we got it. We know who we write in his voice as well. So it's very easy. Like when we're both writing his lines and darling, how he elongates his darling, words, darling, you know, and all that. It just, and then you gave us some great lines from your diary.
From before. You know what? When you said that, I was like, yeah, go on. I was really excited. But it's so funny because I don't hear you two talking when you're doing the voices. It is the characters. And I listened to it really carefully the last show I listened to, trying to work out who was who, because you're the characters to me on it. You know, it's it's good until you get Steve doing the narration. It's like, oh well, that's Steve. So
that is such a lovely compliment, Ali. Thank you so much for saying that to us, and we're so glad that the accents, like, we know I struggle with accents and we know I struggle with certain accents.
That's all part of the fun, to be honest, especially when you go all Welsh and just lose it halfway through.
This is going to, isn't it?
When he goes into a flawless Brummy and then directly into Bernie and then into someone else, into Glenn, who's South African, and then I can't even master Daisy, you know, and then I'm getting Daisy and Adam mixed up because I got too into it and I wasn't reading what I was reading, you know, like, that's the bits there. But that's why I continue to do this. And, you know, and I will say this right now, because it's a question people have, is we're writing the stories organically as we can do for the characters themselves and for the story, not for us to make it funny or to put ourselves into that situation. I don't think about performing when I'm writing, and Steve's the same. When we write, we just think about, okay, here's where we're going, here's what we discussed, here's what we've agreed. And there's times Steve and I disagree. We'll be in a scene and we'll be talking about it, and we edit it and we go through it, and we only ever do that once before a record, and that's only if we've written separately so we can get the other voice in there, because time is of a premium for us. There's times where I would go away and write a scene, and Steve would look at it and go, oh, I'm not sure that would happen or work like that. And he would go in and make some changes. And the odd time we come together, we disagree over certain things and we fight and argue and we're like, no,
ooh,
I really
I'd love to know what stuff you disagree over.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But we're not writing it to perform it. We're writing it just to write it. And then the performance comes afterwards as part of the podcast. And that's the bit where I start sweating, because, you know, I don't know if you noticed this, and there's a couple of things perhaps I'll mention, but Daisy doesn't say a lot all the way through it until that one scene.
Yes, I have noticed.
On purpose. Yeah. And it was Steve that pointed out, and I didn't realize. He went, are you not giving a lines because you just don't want to speak? And I was like, no, not at all. I just don't think she's got much to say. And he went, oh, right. And I was like, well, actually, we know that she's got this scene coming up. And he started laughing. He's like, yeah, good luck, mate. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's coming, isn't it? And I fretted so, like Steve does a great job in the edit, but I am pausing so many to try and get the accent right in my head. I have to keep a frame of reference.
There is so much.
You need like a word, don't you?
Well, he does. And on the cutting room floor, I have maybe 2 hours worth of, why a man. That, honestly, I spend more time removing that than anything from the edit.
It's the only way I can lead into what she's saying. But my other thing is, Did you notice any particular food theme coming out of this this episode?
This season, yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously, Wayne just eats constantly, doesn't he? But
this is true.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, obviously, you've got the episode that's called...
Well, let me ask you this question. Let me ask you the question then. What's your favourite biscuit?
Ah, yes. I was thinking about it. I thought you might ask me this question. So, yeah, I had it ready. Bourbon.
Oh, and why a bourbon?
Well, I like to bite the top off the bourbon and then bite the chocolate out the middle and then suck the bottom one so it dissolves in your mouth. Or if you're feeling like you will need a big chocolate hit, you can just take a full-on bite.
Wow. So it, not,
I'm starting to think, I mean, Maida, we weren't too far away with that scene we wrote now. I'm thinking...
it's true. It's true. So you're a classic girl then. You like a classic bourbon.
I do. I love a bourbon. Yeah. And they hold together quite well when you dunk them.
And they're cheap. They're cheap as chips, aren't they, the bourbon? None of these fancy
They are. Really cheap. Yeah. Like 50p for a bag or something. Or even less. I do like ginger nuts as well.
Ginger nuts. Just to mix it up a little bit. You know, a bit of spice in your mouth.
they're good if you're going on rides and stuff. I really like theme parks. So they're good for motion sickness. We'll have a big packet of them if we go to Alton Towers.
that is absolutely. We made biscuits a bit of a subtle theme running through because certain characters eat biscuits at certain times, and as Karen said at the beginning, you can tell a lot about someone about the biscuit they eat. So they're all purposefully aligned to everyone. Yeah.
Right. Well, you see, obviously worked because I knew you were going to ask me what biscuit I wanted. I like so. Yeah, it subliminally. Subliminally.
Yeah.
That was easy for me to say.
So we've not got long left. Let's if you don't mind, I know you've gone to a little bit of trouble to pull out some excerpts from your diary for us.
Oh gosh.
Ali's Camp Coat Diary. So is there anything that watching this season has sort of brought to the forefront of your mind about what you experienced yourself and that you'd like to share with us?
Oh, goodness. Yeah, all sorts of stuff. But I'm trying to remember what I said last time. I don't want to repeat myself.
So last time you talked about snogging someone in a in the kids place. You talked about loneliness in your chalet and writing about missing your boyfriend. I think that's all you really talked about. And you mentioned me and Steve, as in you were watching our shows. And my show was, quote, okay.
And I made you feel at ease with the circus skills. I seem to remember.
So
I took great pride in that.
To explain
Steve, that classic Steve juggling with emotions.
when I was so busy spinning all those plates, what can I do? Sorry.
Did I talk about when I got in the cast?
No.
No.
Ah, okay. So. This is 2 months after I'd started working there. As always, a huge amount of things have happened since I last wrote. And for a start, and most importantly, I got cast in capital letters 3 times. Well, as an understudy anyway, I will be known as Allura and I will probably be kept on over Christmas. The other people who got it were this person, this person, this person. I was ecstatic for about 30 seconds until I looked around and realised that nobody else was pleased for me. For the next few days, I discovered who my real friends are. This person handed in a notice and has been slagging me off, but I've now moved into a caravan, number 95, right in the sticks, but it's fantastically quiet. And we have a kitchen, dining room, living room and bathroom. And I've drawn a little plan of it.
Hey! Did it have a heart-shaped bed and a mirrored ceiling, though? That's the question.
It didn't, no. But I have put where the dining area is and drawn a little table. And I got the big room. I'm so much happier in the caravan. Now, with cast, I'm getting taught the lead role of the devil woman in Fright Night. And I've heard that two of this cast are leaving, so there is a possibility that I could be in it. At the moment, I'm getting so many compliments on my dancing and performing abilities. I'm very, very what's the word, understated, not a big head at all. This life is so fickle. One minute it's crap and the next it's amazing. It's not real life. Anyway, I've got my first stage school show without this person, so I'm a little bit anxious, but it will be okay.
Fantastic. That was amazing. Do you know what? Thanks. And you know, as you do it, as you're talking there, I'm transported back. I really can feel those emotions that you're talking about.
Me too.
And it's weird, isn't it, how those words from all that time ago, and so much happens in your life since, but you almost feel that person there and you start to feel those emotions again. It's really odd.
Yeah, and you know, I felt like it is like reading her, and I feel sad for her when she's sad and I feel excited for her when she's happy. And, you know, I can kind of look back at that young version of myself and just be like, oh, well done, you got through it. And
so you want to put an arm around them, yeah?
Yeah, and I'm sure it's going to be a hard thing to remember. When you looked around the room and you realised that other people weren't happy for you, what did you go and do? Did you go and, I mean, where did you seek solace? Did you go and speak to a friend? Did you ring your mum up? I mean, what happened there?
No,
afterwards?
I would have just gone back to my room. I mean, there's bits further on, which I'll talk to you about another time, because, you know, we can't spend all day. But like, especially when I got into cast and I'm just like, I'm so lonely.
You've got to read that bit. You can't leave it on a cliffhanger.
Let me have a look.
let's go into cast. That's not me and Steve looking for ideas for our next.
This isn't about me being lonely, but this is a bit of drama that you might enjoy. Today has been my day off, but I feel the need to record one of the events from the other day. Cutting a very long story short, my friend and I were late back after dinner break. This is during rehearsals. And the head girl was stressed about the amount of shows that we need to learn and clean. So she shouted at us. I didn't agree with what she was saying and answered back. Both her and one of the boys in the cast had a huge go at me. She's head girl, respect her, blah, blah, bollocks, blah, blah. This pissed me off for the rest of the afternoon, but I calmed down enough to apologise. I've put in capital letters with their speech marks. I calmed down enough to apologise and tell her that I do respect her position, but I won't be talked down to. The next morning, I was called in for an informal meeting with the head girl, the choreographer, and her assistant. I was asked to explain myself and what happened. I expressed the same thoughts and feelings, but due to the fact that head girl was in the room, I couldn't say that I didn't think she's very good at being head girl. Although she's a good dancer, she can't teach at all. The choreographer then started going on about how much more disciplined the other dancers were and that my training wasn't equal to theirs. I'm getting a bit sick of them assuming that because they trained at dance college and I did a dance degree that they know more than me. I will know more than they will ever know. I have been taught for the last 3 years to be an individual with style and a brain of my own. But they've been taught to be exactly the same. Sheep, bloody sheep. I need to get out of here so I can be creative and choreograph, not be a slave to the resort and all that is identical. I don't want to be like everyone else. There you go.
Fantastic.
Wow. Well done.
Deep, isn't it? Deep.
It is really deep. Ali, I think there's no better place to leave it than that, because that was an incredible insight into the difficulties of these situations. And hopefully, you'll come back and talk to us again some more another time about all of these situations and when we've done the next few episodes.
Well, Ali, I would like to formally invite you to the next recording after this next script, so you can come back and talk to us about the next portion of the show and share more diary. So if you want to, of course, but I would love to make this a serial.
You know that I would happily talk to you guys every night of the week. So yeah, thank you for inviting me back.
Thank you for joining us. And on that note, we'll have to say goodnight. Thank you for everybody for tuning in, and join us soon for another episode and a brand new script on Bad Scripts. Bad Scripts was written and performed by Mike Garlia and Steve Jones, a Beach Tide production.